and with the Asgardian's blood, which ran as red and as heavy as that of any mortal Thanos had ever encountered. His gloved hands in particular were thick with it, and some part of him thought that this was wrong. He was not a doctor, not a sterile seeker of healing. The blood should touch his flesh. He owed that much to Vathlas, who had endured quite exquisite pain at Thanos' hands. Pain so exquisite that both Cha and Kebi had excused themselves under the guise of exploring the outpost for supplies. And yet Thanos had remained. Had remained and had tortured this little godling for as long as it took. He'd felt nothing the whole time. No shame, no guilt, no nausea or revulsion. He was simply doing what needed to be done if he was to save the people of Titan. He peeled off his blood-stained gloves, stiff and tacky, then dragged a finger through the blood, to feel it on his flesh. It was sticky, and only partly dry. He rolled it between his thumb and forefinger until it dyed his fingers black.
"Every drop shed saves millions more," he thought. "Every drop shed is another life preserved."
He rose slowly, stiffly. According to Vathlas, a ship came through this part of the galaxy once a fortnight, an Asgardian ship bound for Asgard itself. Called the Blood Edda, it had permission to cross what he called the Bifrost, which was apparently some sort of special Asgardian wormhole technology that led specifically in and out of the kingdom.
"Odin's vault is in the castle,"
Vathlas had said, choking on his own blood, pausing to catch his breath.
"You can't miss it. It's the tallest damn thing in the kingdom. Once you're aboard the Blood Edda, you can bypass the Bifrost and go straight to the palace. What you seek must be the ether,"
Vathlas had continued.
"The Infinity Stone."
"Infinity Stone."
Thanos rolled the words over in his mind, feeling the heft of them, their psychic gravity. He'd never heard of such a thing before, but something in the way Vathlas spoke the words, with an almost hesitant, reverent breath, told him volumes. The Infinity Stone. It existed. The artifact his lordship had sought was not a flicker of madness in a dying man's diseased head. It was real. He said it again, musing.
"Infinity Stone."
"Yes. Bor, father of Odin, took it from the Dark Elves millennia past."
"And you believe Odin still has it?"
"No one knows where it is, but the vault."
And then Vathlas had passed out. Now, though, he stirred and coughed up something too solid to be mere blood, interrupting Thanos' deep thoughts. He glared at Thanos with his remaining eye.
"You'll die there, Titan. You'll die in the glory that is Asgard."
"Which is more than I can say for you,"
Thanos told him, and leaned over, reaching out for the Asgardian's throat. God or not, he died just the same. They had 6 days before the Blood Edda was due to arrive at the outpost. They spent the time exploring the building and planning. The outpost boasted a magnificently stocked larder, the likes of which Thanos had never seen before. Entire sides of beef, salted and preserved, kegs of sweet mead, hardtack biscuits and honey-dipped cakes. They ate until they were sick, then threw up and ate again simply because it was worth it. Thanos had not eaten so well since Titan.
"It's going to get bloody,"
Thanos warned them as they lolled in a post-meal torpor.
"Going to?"
Cha asked.
"What do you call what you did to poor Vathlas?"
"Poor Vathlas would have killed us in an eye blink, given the opportunity," Thanos told him.
Kebi nodded in solidarity.
"Your pacifism is noted and counterproductive, especially since we may need to kill more of these Asgardians."
"Your confidence is charming, and perhaps unearned,"
Kebi pointed out. Thanos shrugged diffidently.
"I told you both you were mad to join me."
"I stand by you,"
Kebi said.
As do I,
Chas said after a moment. Thanos blinked in surprise.
Really? I'd have thought the blood of an Asgardian would have changed your mind by now.
Cha considered for long moments, pinching the tips of his pointed ears, as he often did when lost in thought.
The Asgardians are a martial people, prone to bloodlust and bloodshed. I will not weep for their losses.
I enjoy your special brand of hypocrisy,
Thanos said with admiration.
Come, let's take inventory.
In addition to its larder, the outpost also featured an impressive armory, considering it was crewed by a single staffer. Food and weapons, the cornerstones of Asgardian life. There were axes and swords alongside more exotic fare. A recoilless pulse stave, a brace of grip-tight plasma knuckles, a lightning bow, and even something that looked like a cross between a rifle and a radar dish. When Thanos pointed it at a target and pulled the trigger, it issued forth a blast of invisible, pulsating sound waves that rattled his teeth and made his eyes bleed.
Sonic Screamer!
Cha shouted when it was over, and they were all temporarily deaf.
Never seen one before!
Effective!
Thanos screamed back.
I hate you both!
Kebi yelled, blotting blood from the shell of her left ear.
Read the instructions next time!
They made a tally of their available weapons, checked every entrance to the outpost, barricaded all but the front door. They wanted to give Subterfuge a chance, but Thanos had a feeling that they would not get so lucky a second time.
We have to be ready to fight our way aboard, he warned them. We were fortunate to wound the god of keeping, etc. early on.
You're welcome,
Kebi interjected.
But we can't assume we'll be so lucky the second time. It may come down to combat.
Well, that's good,
Cha remarked.
Because we have a Titan who's only been in a couple of fights, a Medico who's never seen war, and a woman who grew up on a wheel ship and has never been in a direct fight, going up against a crew renowned across the galaxy for its bloodlust and fighting prowess. So how can it go wrong?
We trick them, Thanos said. But we fight if we must, and we board the Blood Edda, commandeering it and making it our own.
Kebi interrupted again.
Are we naming this one Sanctuary too?
Thanos said nothing. He'd been considering it.
Its name is not important. What matters is that we will be able to use it to traverse the Bifrost and enter Asgard.
This is where the plan falls apart,
Cha said.
You're wrong, Thanos told him. The plan does not fall apart at this point, because once we're in Asgard, there is no plan. Ergo, it can't fall apart.
That doesn't comfort me,
Kebi said, to an agreeing nod from Cha.
Without explicit information on Asgard, there's no point in making a plan,
Thanos told them. It was simple. If need be, he would crash the Blood Edda into the palace and take advantage of the confusion to find Odin's vault. In the ensuing chaos, he would make his way back out. Not the best plan, he admitted, but the only one at his disposal. Let anarchy and surprise substitute for the weapons and army he did not have.
We cross the Bifrost and figure out the rest later.
He sounded more confident than he felt. Fortunately, the others couldn't tell the difference. Chapter 25 The Blood Edda crossed through the wormhole at Alfheim, exactly 6 days after Thanos and his crew arrived at the outpost. The Asgardians were nothing if not punctual. Its arrival set off a series of automatic systems at the outpost. Security codes were transferred, cryptographic keys engaged at the quantum level, and the outpost machinery granted permission for the Blood Edda to land. The ship hove into view on the moon's horizon. It looked like a great metallic bird, its wings frozen in place and frosted with gleaming steel. It settled into the moon's dust a few meters from the outpost. After a moment, a ramp lowered and extended into the environment shield. Three figures strode down the ramp. Each wore skin-tight, flexible metal carapaces in a variety of colors, royal blue, deep crimson, solar yellow. They carried swords and photonic rifles and walked with the easy confidence of warriors who have seen blood and battle and lived not only to tell the tale, but to live it again and again. The three Asgardians entered the outpost and stopped in the entry hall. The place was utterly silent. They shared a skeptical look between them. Then their leader cupped his hands around his mouth and called out,
"Ho, Vathlos! Brother battle-tested! Come greet your war friends Snorri, Brucey, and Hromund! Wash our throats with mead and ale!"
The call echoed down the empty halls. Without so much as a coordinating glance, sensing something direly wrong, all three warriors drew their weapons at the same time. Suddenly, the lights in the entry went out. The only light came from the hallway up ahead, and that was partially blotted out by a massive, hulking figure who strode closer into view.
"I'm afraid we've drunk all the mead," Thanos said. "I will give you one chance," Thanos began, but never finished his sentence.
"What?" said the leader, Snorri. "See, brothers, monster large of purple flesh and combat dighted, I long to flex my muscles, to hear the song of blood and battle, and avenge our brother's soul, brave, worn, courage-riddled."
With a cry, the three Asgardians launched themselves at Thanos, who stepped back a pace in order to have room to bring his sonic screamer to bear. He was wearing earplugs. The Asgardians weren't. Still, they pressed on through the rippling, vibrating waves of sound that slammed into them. Snorri's nose spurted blood, which matted in his heavy mustache. Brucey growled and pawed at his left ear, which was gushing blood, but never stopped moving forward. And Hromund let loose a blood-curdling berserker war cry so loud that it momentarily overcame the pulses from the sonic screamer as he charged forward, swinging his sword. Thanos' eyes widened at the sight of the battle-crazed Asgardian bearing down on him. He'd thought no one could resist the brain-scrambling frequencies of the sonic screamer, but here was, apparently, the god of doing things you thought were impossible, just a meter or two away from cutting off the hands that held the weapon. From her perch above the doorway, Kebi dropped down to the floor between Thanos and Hromund, opened her mouth, and blasted out a cloud of venom. Thanos caught just a whiff of it, and it made his eyes water. But so great and all-consuming was Hromund's rage that he tucked his head down and rushed through the cloud. By the time he got to Thanos, he was bleeding from both eyes and both ears, with snot and blood gushing from his nose as well, but he didn't care. He swung his sword in a wide, blind arc, narrowly missing Kebi, but landing a solid blow on the sonic screamer. Vibrations ran up Thanos' arms, jittering his shoulders, shaking the screamer right out of his hands. It landed, dented and spitting sparks at his feet, no longer functional.
"For Vathlos!"
Hromund screamed.
"For Asgard!"
Snorri cried.
"For Odin!"
Brucey bellowed. Thanos lashed out with a fist, catching Hromund under his jaw. It wasn't the most powerful punch Thanos had ever thrown, but it connected. That was all that mattered. He was wearing the plasma knuckles, which sent a burst of explosive energy coursing through Hromund's face. As Thanos watched, the Asgardian's chin split in two, clear up to his mouth.
"Ooh, a third!"
Hromund exclaimed. And, to Thanos' shock and great respect, kept fighting. His sword glanced off Thanos' armored gauntlet, but left a long, deep scar there.
"We can't beat them!"
Kebi cried as she ducked a sword swing from Brucey. Even rattled by the sonic screamer and weakened by her toxin, the Asgardians were fierce warriors.
"We don't have to beat them!"
Thanos reminded her.
"Cha, change of plans! Do it now!"
In his earbud, Cha's voice came to him.
"Now? But you and Kebi are within the—"
"Now, damn it, now!"
Thanos sidestepped Snorri's sword, then shoved the bloody Asgardian back a few paces. With a swift movement, he grabbed Kebi by the elbow and dragged her through the door with him. As he watched, the Asgardians, again without so much as a coordinating glance at one another, dropped their swords and unslung their rifles. Thanos and Kebi were dead in their sights at point-blank range.
"Damn!"
Kebi exclaimed. Two things happened simultaneously. First, Thanos slammed his fist into the control for the inner door. It slid shut just as the first energy blasts from the Asgardian rifles struck it. Second, the outer doors swung open, and the Asgardians opened their mouths in silent screams as the vacuum of space sucked the air and heat from the entryway. They never got to fire a second volley of shots from their rifles, as they were plucked from their spots and sucked out the door by the sudden outrush of air. Tossed by inertia high above the lunar surface, they shot hundreds of meters away before the moon's weak gravity dragged them back down to the ground. By then, they were already long dead. Inside, Cha screamed over the communicator.
"Did it work? Are you alive? Did it work?"
Thanos tapped his earbud.
"You should have more faith in me, Cha."
Kebi sighed in relief and slumped against the wall.
"I told you we should have just shut off the environment field before they arrived."
"Their sensors would have detected the lack of atmosphere, and they wouldn't have left the ship. We had to do it this way."
He looked down at his left arm. Roman's sword had done more than leave a cut in his gauntlet. He saw now that it had cut through the gauntlet and sliced open his forearm to the bone. The whiteness of the bone shocked him.
"Cha, we need medical attention."
He used his good hand to bring up a hologram of the Blood Edda.
"And then we're going out there."
Less than half an hour later, they reestablished the environment field and went out to the ship. To Thanos' great surprise, Cha slung a rifle over his shoulder when he joined them.
"Bringing the fist in pacifist, I see,"
he commented.
"I thought it would take longer for you to see the utility of violence."
Cha curled his upper lip.
"I told you, I don't mourn for the Asgardians."
The ramp to the ship was still down and within range of the field, so they simply ambled from the entryway to the ramp, then up the ramp and into the tight confines of the Blood Edda, where they beheld a woman in a spacesuit wielding a battle axe who cried out,
"Vengeance! By Odin's empty socket!"
and swung the axe in a broad arc. It cut Thanos in a lead across his chest, and he watched his own blood jet out of him. He had just enough time to take a breath before the axe swung back again. Barely evading its deadly, blood-smeared gleam, he leaped to one side, colliding with Cha, who slammed into the bulkhead of the ship. The Asgardian, surely the goddess of surprise attacks, he thought in a moment of vertiginous, mordant sarcasm, seemed no more tired for her swinging of the massive axe. She lashed out again, this time striking Thanos squarely in the meat of his right shoulder. Blood and fire exploded in him. The axe was buried in his flesh and muscle. He could feel it, cold and slimy and burning all at once. Beneath him, Cha struggled to unsling the rifle he'd brought with him, but Thanos's bulk made it difficult. Kebi spat out a stream of intense, concentrated venom, but the Asgardian's spacesuit made her impervious to the poison.
"Blood destiny!"
she cried.
"Vengeance work!"
The axe was stuck in Thanos, caught on a bone perhaps, and as she tugged and pulled at it, his entire body flared with impossible pain. It felt as though someone were trying to pull out his innards through his armpit. Cha managed to wriggle one arm out from under Thanos. At the same time, Kebi fell back a few steps and drew a pistol she'd purloined from the outpost's armory. When she pulled the trigger, nothing happened. At first. An instant later, the Asgardian threw back her head and howled, caught in the throes of a burst of electricity that set her neurons on fire. She danced like a marionette under the control of a toddler, her limbs jangling and flailing. Most important of all, she let go of the damned axe. Thanos groaned and rolled onto his back, giving Cha the freedom to aim his rifle. He took a shot at the Asgardian and missed, the plasma bolt erupting instead on a bank of equipment nearby. The equipment exploded into a gout of fire.
"Pyro danger!"
the ship's artificial intelligence cried out.
"Pyro danger!"
Thanos bellowed in pain as he moved even farther to give Cha a better angle. The axe, still stuck in him, bit deeper into his flesh with every motion, no matter how small. Cha fired again. Kebi did at the same time. The Asgardian was caught in the crossfire, and she screamed, her spacesuit now in flames from the heat of the blasts. The ship's voice became more panicked, and suddenly vents opened and there was a loud hiss of an invisible gas. And the ramp, Thanos noticed through pain-blurred eyes, was closing. The ship's protocol was to protect itself and its cargo. It would seal the exit and flood itself with nitrogen gas to extinguish the fire. Thanos could survive on pure nitrogen for a time. Titan's atmosphere was thick with the stuff. He didn't know about Cha or Kebi, or the Asgardian, for that matter. With all his strength, and with a cry of pain, Thanos forced himself to his feet. The air stank of flame and blood, charred meat and ozone. He could barely see through the haze of smoke. With an effort that surpassed everything he believed about his own limits, Thanos reached behind himself and took the handle of the axe in his free hand. Screaming into the smoke, he wrenched the blade free. A moment of singular bliss and no pain was immediately consumed by a successive moment of torment that refused to go away. His body felt as on fire metaphorically as the Asgardian was literally. Barely able to stand, he clutched the axe as blood streamed from his shoulder, running down his arm, slickening the handle. As he watched, the Asgardian's flames died and then snuffed entirely. The nitrogen had done its job. The fire was out, and the ship was reoxygenating. She stood tall and proud still, her spacesuit now a melted second skin. He could not imagine the sheer agony she must be feeling, and yet the only spark in her eyes was one of anger and revenge.
"By Freya's beauty," she said,
her voice low and halting as she took shallow breaths.
"I'll have your balls for this."
Cha struggled to his feet next to Thanos. Kebi came up to his side. They outnumbered her 3-1, and yet they were the ones frightened and unsure. The Asgardian slapped her hands together, and the plasma knuckles she wore on each hand sparked to life, sheathing her fists in a bleakly yellow coruscating light.
"Stand down,"
Thanos told her, his voice shaking. He fought to steady himself, but it was all for naught. He was grievously wounded and couldn't pretend otherwise.
"You're hurt. You can't win."
"You're hurt too," she said. "I've sung my battle song on the frozen wastelands of Jotunheim. I've breathed hotter fires on the lava shores of Muspelheim. I fear no man, god or beast. I am Yrsa, daughter of Jorund and Gorm."
Her lips curled into a cruel, knowing smile.
"You are mortal dung to be scraped off my boot. Yield, and your deaths will be honorable."
Before Thanos could respond, Kebi swore a vile curse and threw herself at Yrsa, who batted her away with a plasma-powered fist. Kebi reeled off to one side and collided with a series of switches and buttons.
"Damage threshold exceeded," the ship reported. "Prepare for emergency evacuation."
In an instant, the ship's thrusters engaged. Thanos was tossed back against the bulkhead from the momentum of the sudden takeoff. Yrsa jerked to one side, but grabbed a nearby handhold and kept her feet under her. Cha crumpled to the floor, and Kebi went stumbling across the chamber to collapse into a chair. The force of the impact against the wall sent a blistering red shockwave of agony through Thanos, starting at the site of his injury and radiating outward. He dropped the axe and swooned with pain. Through lidded eyes, he watched as Yrsa strode over to Cha, her fists alight with power. Her stance was wobbly, her movement stiff from the melted spacesuit, but she was confident and vigorous as she raised a fist. But before she could bring that powered blow down upon Cha's unprotected skull, Kebi pounced on her from behind, wrapping her arms around Yrsa's throat, keening at the top of her lungs. She bit down on the Asgardian's head with that wide maw, her needle-like teeth ripping away the spacesuit and the flesh beneath it, specks of blood spattered against the wall. Thanos fought through the pain. He felt around blindly for the axe. His fingers found it and needed two tries to close around its handle. With a growl, he rose to his feet and staggered to where Yirsa was thrashing about the cabin, twisting and turning and trying to land a punch on Kebi, who clung tightly and kept tearing away hunks of skin and material with her teeth. Cha got to his feet, bracing himself against the wall.
"Be careful!"
he cried.
"Don't hit Kebi!"
In that moment, though, all Thanos cared about was killing the Asgardian witch who stood between him and the end of this madness. He hefted the axe over his head, bellowed with the pain that burst from his shoulder, then brought it down, hard, and missed. At the last moment, Yirsa clumsily danced to one side, still swatting at Kebi. Thanos's axe crashed into a control panel, spraying steel and wiring in every direction. A panel exploded off and spun wildly through the air, smacking into Cha and knocking him out cold.
"Damage assessment mortal," the ship announced. "Executing retreat protocol."
"Don't you dare!"
Yirsa cried out, finally finding the leverage she needed to flip Kebi off her. Kebi landed on her back, and Yirsa stomped once on her head, then kicked her in the face. Kebi slid across the floor, perfectly still.
"Keep us here!"
Yirsa yelled to the ship.
"Override," the system said. "Retreating."
With a speed that impressed and terrified, Yirsa ran to Thanos' side and kneed him in the gut, then spun him around and punched him in the gash she'd axed into him. He roared in pain and struck her with his fist, sending her sprawling back across the cabin.
"I'll say this for Asgard,"
Thanos hissed.
"They breed their women strong."
Yirsa responded with a string of invective so vulgar that Thanos had never even heard a third of the words before.
"This ship is retreating to Asgard,"
Thanos said, laughing through his pain. Blood welled up between his lips, and he spat a mouthful.
"Which is precisely where we want to go. You failed."
"You slew my boon companions," she snarled. "There is no force in the universe that can keep me from killing you."
"Your boon companions were weak,"
Thanos told her. Darkness had begun to creep in around the edges of his sight. Kebi was dead. Cha was unconscious.
"We are strong. Like you. Join us. We're going to save lives."
"By killing people?"
"Yes, precisely."
She let loose a mighty yawp and leaped at him. Thanos fell back, knowing that he had no defense. And Kebi collided with Yirsa, crashing the two of them into the control panel again. The ship lurched in space. A klaxon rang out, and a new voice warned,
"Off course, off course."
Kebi's face was a mash of blood and hanging scales. She could barely move her mouth, but she managed to hook her lower teeth into the skin of Yirsa's jaw and dragged up, raking furrows into the Asgardian's face, shredding the skin of her cheek to reveal the inside of her mouth. Her tongue flapped madly as she keened and howled like a gutted wolf. Kebi dragged herself off the Asgardian and over to Thanos, who sank to the floor and cradled her in his arms. Her left eye hung loose from its orbit, and her skull was caved in on one side.
"Thank you,"
he whispered.
"Told you before,"
she slurred.
"Meant it before. When said loved you. Meant it."
"You did?"
"No, you naive, clueless,"
she remonstrated, and died in his arms. Thanos gritted his teeth. He let Kebi slip from his arms and, bracing himself against the wall, forced himself to stand. Across the cabin, Yirsa held one hand over her ravaged, bleeding face. With the other, she ran fingers over the ship's controls. Competing voices called out,
"Override. Controls locked out.
Go to Damerong Protocol!"
and over and over. He made himself walk to her. He stumbled at the last moment and collided with her, knocking them both to the floor.
"You damned fool!"
she said, blood spraying in every direction from her mouth and through her cheek.
"We're not—"
"You killed my boon companion,"
Thanos told her, groaning with pain. The blackness was almost entirely across his field of vision now, but he could still see her, could see the sudden terror in her eyes.
"There is no force in the universe that can keep me from killing you."
She pummeled him with both fists until the power in her plasma knuckles went dead. Thanos didn't budge. He lay atop her, holding her down, and he took her head between his massive hands, and he closed his useless eyes and squeezed, and asked fate or the universe or whatever powers there might be for just this one favor. The Blood Edda tumbled through space, its engines misfiring, its guidance system damaged by the conflict that had raged within. Its protocols demanded that it gain entrance to the Bifrost and return to Asgard. But those protocols had been countermanded by its commander, who had, in her confusion and pain, entered conflicting orders into the control system. Safeguards had been damaged or deactivated in the fight, and now the Blood Edda was firing its thrusters in competing directions, trying desperately to comply with all its orders, no matter how mutually exclusive. It approached the wormhole near Alfheim, tried to course-correct away. Couldn't. The Blood Edda hit the wormhole at a sharp angle and vanished. Thanos woke to red lights flashing and the voice of the ship's computer screaming warnings, alarms, alerts. He could barely move.
"Thanos! Thanos!"
It was Cha. He'd awakened and was strapped into an emergency crash couch.
"Get up!"
Cha screamed.
"You have to get up and get to a—"
Cha's words were swallowed by a burst of sound and light, the likes of which Thanos had never heard or seen before. Without proper calculations or protections, they'd hit the wormhole. The Blood Edda was now in gate space, hurtling through the universe with no direction, no course, no safety measures engaged. Thanos, blissfully, passed out again. Chapter 26. He dreamed. He dreamed of her. Gwynth reached out to him. Her skin sloughed off her hand like a rotting glove.
"Not yet,"
she said.
"Not yet."
He opened his eyes. Smoke pearled before him. He felt fire nearby. He could breathe, barely. Racked by a spasm of coughing from the fumes, his body protested with great agony. The axe. He was damned near cut to pieces. The smoke parted for a moment, and he saw something loom over him. Standing on two legs, its skin was gray, with a hard shell covering that was blackish-green and shiny. It reached out for him with hands that had too many thumbs, and he sank into the black again. The next time he awoke, it was for good. He lay in a cocoon of some viscous substance, a white, sticky webbing that wound around his upper body. It smelled slightly of sulfur and bitumen. When he tried to raise a hand, he found that he was bound up in the stuff and couldn't move. He fought against it, and a few strands broke.
"Whoa, whoa, don't!"
a familiar voice called. Thanos craned his head to the left and saw Cha limping toward him. A similar web wound around his left leg like a cast.
"Don't do that!"
"Cha."
Thanos' voice was weak, his throat raw and unslaked.
"What's happened to us?"
Cha approached the edge of Thanos' cocoon. It was suspended from the ceiling of what appeared to be a dank cavern that smelled of rot and old food. It swayed slightly when Thanos moved.
"This is a healing mesh," Cha explained. "You've been cocooned for medical reasons. They're healing you."
"Where is Kebi?"
Thanos demanded. though he knew the answer.
Dead. The Asgardian, too.
Thanos could not spare the energy to sigh. He'd hoped that in the smoke and confusion and pain of the battle with Yrsa, his assessment of Kebby's injuries had been off.
I was in a crash couch, Cha went on, so I survived the impact. You?
I am not yet ready to die. I am.
You are alive by great fortune, Thanos. Even you must see that now.
Luck applied unequally cannot be truly great, he said, thinking. If the universe were the fair and equitable place you like to imagine it is, Kebby would still be alive, and I would not be this misshapen wretch you see before you, and you would not be tethered to me, made to suffer.
I suffered before I met you, kidnapped by his lordship, taken from everything I knew. You are a blessing, not a curse, Thanos, and I am grateful they saw fit to save you from the wreckage of the ship.
Who are they?
Thanos asked. Cha hesitated a moment.
They are called the Chitauri.
Mind. Conquer yourself first. The world will follow. Chapter 27. It took months in the healing cocoon before Thanos could support himself again, much less walk. A year and then some passed before he stood on his own two feet and emerged from what he had initially thought to be a cavern. It was not a cavern. It was a creature, a living monstrosity unlike any he'd ever seen or even heard of. His hosts called it a Leviathan. Like them, it was part insect, part reptile, and part machine. Thanos had never encountered their like before, and he was both disgusted and astonished by them in equal measure. He had been suspended in the healing cocoon within the mouth of the Leviathan, recovering and slowly piecing himself back together. Now the teeth of the great creature parted, and he and Cha stepped out into the sun for the first time. The sun was disappointing, to say the least. A hard black disk in the sky, throwing off precious little light and heat. He understood suddenly why the Chitauri had merged their flesh with machines. Insects and reptiles could not survive in such cold conditions. But by melding technology to their biology, they could compensate for their evolutionary weaknesses. Cha had explained something of the Chitauri to him as the long weeks became longer months in his cocoon. They were a caste-based society, with different social ranks for different assigned tasks. There was a domestic caste, which attended to the mundane tasks of reproduction and the tending of the hearth, while the science caste sought ways to improve the Chitauri biology and technology, securing through artificial means what nature had not deigned to give them. And there was a warrior caste, he learned. But that caste had accomplished little.
They share a hive mind, Cha explained.
He'd been ingratiating himself into the Chitauri's good graces and learning about their culture while Thanos convalesced.
So there's no superior thinker, no one who can develop tactics and strategy from the perspective of an outsider. They don't know how to create. They have no art.
Thanos stood atop a bluff that overlooked the Chitauri central city, his hands clasped behind his back, Cha at his side. He had hiked up here as a way of testing himself, to see how much of him had survived the battle of the Blood Edda and the ensuing crash on the Chitauri homeworld. He was winded. He was weak. He was no good to anyone. Not now.
They need someone to guide them,
Thanos said, pursing his lips.
What are you thinking? Cha asked.
I am thinking that only an egotist or a fool does not learn from failure. The egotist blames others, and the fool is not wise enough to assign blame at all.
He sat down and stared off into the distance. Cha sat next to him. The black sun dipped below the horizon, throwing its wavering purple light into the mountains.
You blame yourself for Kebby's death?
I blame myself for much. If I learn from it, it will not be so bad. I've had a year to do nothing more than think. It's been instructive.
And what have you learned? Thanos considered.
My goal is grand, but perhaps it makes sense to accomplish it through intermediaries, rather than exposing myself to harm. Perhaps if I had warned Titan of its impending calamity through someone else, someone who did not wear this purple and distorted face, my people would have listened. And maybe if we had sent someone ahead to the outpost, Kebby would still be alive.
You can't know that.
No. But look out there and understand, Cha.
He gestured out to the city. It was a conglomerate of leviathans, all arranged around a central vessel called a mothership. It was orderly and distinct, like bees in a hive or ants in a hill. The Chitauri moved with precision, each one a part of a larger whole.
There is a perfect army here, if only someone could harness it. No need to risk myself or you.
Cha nodded slowly.
There's someone you should meet, he said.
Are you proposing to help me build an army?
Thanos was mildly amused by Cha's sudden turn away from pacifism.
Did the battle with the Asgardian awaken your own Syrian brand of bloodlust?
Hardly, Cha sniffed. Quite the opposite. But you're trying to save lives on Titan. I believe in that cause. If an army is what it takes to make your people listen, then let's have an army. Violence as a bulwark against greater violence may be ethical after all.
You're an insufferable optimist,
Thanos told him.
As are you, my friend.
No, I'm a pragmatist.
Cha shrugged.
In this case, they are one and the same.
Together they entered a small leviathan through its open mouth. Thanos had not yet become accustomed to the spongy surface of the beast's tongue beneath his feet, and suspected he never would. The mouth was humid and dark, lit by a bioluminescent spittle that ran down the walls. Toward the top of the gullet, they found a protuberance of cartilage that had the rough shape of a table, with a figure sitting behind it. As they approached, the figure stood. Like all Chitauri, the creature looked to be a hybrid of insect and reptile, with the steely mechanics of a cyborg added for good measure. It opened its mouth and hissed neutrally, as though merely proving it could. Something about its demeanor, though, struck Thanos as different from the other Chitauri he'd met. They had been bent to tasks, rarely meeting his eyes or pausing to speak to him. This one, though...
What is it?
Thanos murmured to Cha.
Not it,
Cha whispered back.
He.
Welcome, Thanos of Titan,
the Chitauri hissed.
I am called the Other.
The Other,
Thanos mused.
As opposed to what?
The Other raised his hands, flexing the two opposable thumbs on each one. The Chitauri's only significant natural evolutionary advantage. Their enhanced manual dexterity just barely made up for the bad luck of being born cold-blooded on a frigid world.
There is no what,
the Other said.
I am simply other, apart, distinct.
He hissed the S in distinct, as though angry at it.
He's a mutation, Cha said. Though they don't have that word, he isn't part of the hive mind.
Thanos raised an eyebrow.
A deviant. A genetic misfit. Like me. Unique.
The Other inclined his head in agreement.
As you say.
Then I will say that it is a pleasure to meet you.
Thanos extended his hand. The Other stared at it until Cha prompted him with,
We've practiced this, remember?
The double thumbs wrapped strangely around Thanos' hand, but it was a good first handshake on this new planet.
I owe you a debt of gratitude,
Thanos said,
for saving my life and the life of my companion. I regret that we have nothing to offer except our thanks.
You have more than that,
the other said. Without warning, he touched Thanos' temple. Thanos resisted the urge to pull away.
You have your brain,
the other told him,
and we wish to use it.
Thanos shot an alarmed glance at Cha, who shook his head minutely.
It's not what you think, that shake communicated. It's okay.
I am fond of my brain where it is, Thanos said. It serves me well there.
The other bowed ever so slightly.
My apologies. I am still unaccustomed to your tongue, and my meaning was not clear. You may keep your brain, Thanos. We wish you to use it on our behalf.
What for?
Thanos mused.
From what I've seen, your society runs well. Your people are fed, clothed, and safe. What more do you need?
Chitauri wish to conquer,
the other said without inflection, as though discussing the weather.
Chitauri wish to leave this world and find other, warmer climes. We have weapons and skills. We have technology and power. But no leader. The warrior caste cannot adapt to combat situations, because all decisions must go through the hive mind first. Too slow. The hive mind is a yoke.
So you need someone at the reins of the cart, Thanos said, stroking his jaw. Why not you? You have independent thought.
The other shook his head slowly.
I lack the experience. I can communicate directly with the hive mind, influence it, guide it. I can issue commands, but I do not know what those commands should be.
He paused here and tapped his four thumbs together in a complicated gesture.
You, Thanos, are a warrior. You have bested an Asgardian. You can lead us.
Cha nodded to Thanos.
You said you wanted an army?
Thanos touched his chin, feeling the ridges that fate and cruelty and genetics had put there.
Yes. Yes, I did.
He made a pact with the other that very day. He would bring the Chitauri to a new world, one more palatable to them, and in return, they would be his soldiers, his intermediaries as he sought to save Titan.
But these goals need not be consecutive, Thanos told him. We can achieve them mutually. We can work on them at the same time.
The other nodded.
Yes, this is sensible and acceptable. It will save time and bring us each our desires that much quicker.
Then we have an accord, said Thanos.
It was mutual exploitation, and both parties were fine with it. The Chitauri would gain a new homeworld, and Thanos would gain an army that could impose his will on Titan. Each time the universe handed him a setback, he found a way to turn it around and reorient himself toward his ultimate goal. His flexibility was as important as his pre-planning. He hadn't been able to reach Hala. The Asgardians had bested him. Fine. No single plan was his only plan. His mind was fecund. He could adapt. The trip through the wormhole at Alfheim had been impromptu. With the blood at a total done impact, Thanos had no way to determine at what angle they'd entered the wormhole or how long they'd traveled within it. The unique black sun in the Chitauri world's sky made it difficult to reckon the precise placement of stars. He spent the better part of another year on the Chitauri homeworld, figuring out how to get back to Titan. During this time, he also inventoried the Chitauri's supplies and weapons, as well as their fighting abilities. The Leviathans were capable of interstellar flight, it turned out. Great, ghastly beasts that could live in the airless vacuum of space, bearing Chitauri safe within them. Two, the Chitauri possessed a rudimentary teleportation technology. Thanos had never seen anything quite like it. It seemed to open mini wormholes in space-time, creating portals that could transport a being from one spot to another without bothering to cross the distance between. He spent a great deal of time experimenting with this technology.
Many Chitauri died during his clinical trials, and many more lined up to participate. With so many corpses at his disposal, he also began a series of investigations into Chitauri anatomy and biology, scrutinizing them down to their bizarre tripartite genetic structure. His father had taught him the elements of genetic manipulation, and soon Thanos was breeding a hardier warrior caste. The Chitauri were grateful. Once again, science delivered to them what nature could not. His experience on the Blood Edda haunted him. On the Golden Birth, his intellect and size had been sufficient to win the day. But against a prepared, capable fighter, he'd been useless. With the Chitauri as sparring partners, he trained in a multitude of armed and unarmed fighting techniques. Many more Chitauri died as his skills improved. They didn't seem to mind. They were a fertile, fecund species who shared a mind. Individuals were fungible. With his training came an appreciation for the capacity and capabilities of his body. He'd spent his life despising his physical form, retreating into intellect and reason. His had been a life of the mind. But now he could hurl a spear 100 meters and strike his target dead on. He could fend off 4 trained Chitauri warriors, his body's speed and resistance to harm a marvel to him. He learned how to anticipate his opponent's moves and counter them, his body and mind, for the first time in his life, working in concert. His bulk, his broad shoulders, his height, these were advantages, and he couldn't believe he'd ever allowed himself to think otherwise. In time, he came to enjoy the training, the thrust and parry, the feint and dodge. He was becoming a fighter and a thinker, a warrior intellect. He felt joyously unstoppable. Still, he knew he'd missed his opportunity to invade Asgard and claim the artifact, the thing Vathlos had called the Aether, or the Infinity Stone. It was possible he didn't need it, though. He could adapt to the new reality of his situation. No Asgardian weapon, true, but his original plan might still suffice. If he could return to Titan with an army, that would be persuasive. Cha was at his side the whole time as he sparred and planned and recuperated, reminding Thanos to rest, exhorting him to take care of himself. "What good is it to return to Titan as a conquering hero and savior if you die yourself?" Thanos didn't bother explaining to Cha that dying on and for Titan had always been part of the plan.
"I'm surprised you've agreed to this accord at all, Cha. What does your particular brand of listless pacifism say about armies? Soldiers, cannon fodder."
"They're only barely alive," Cha said. "I've been among them much longer than you have. They don't think the way we do. They don't have independent, individual souls."
Thanos couldn't help remembering Robo and what Kebi had said about him.
"Some people lead, some people want to be led."
"Is that all that matters?"
he asked Cha.
"Soul, not mind?"
"If any one of them dies," Cha pointed out, "there are 1,000 others in the hive mind who have the same thoughts and memories and impulses. I don't question their minds. But if thoughts are communally shared, where is individual liberty? Where is the individual's ability to discern between right and wrong?"
They argued such issues long into the inky black Chitauri nights, huddled in the maw of a leviathan, warmed by its body heat. In time, Thanos grew used to the fetid odor of the beast. He spent hours poring over charts and plans, applying the same intellect that had led to his discovery of the flaw at Titan's core to the problem of returning to his home. Within a few months, they'd established contact with some nearby trading routes. Shortly after that, they were able to contact Xandar and Hala, opening channels of communication that made it possible to begin plotting a star chart that would take them from the Chitauri homeworld to Titan. And one night, Thanos was awakened from a deep sleep by Cha, who stood over him, trembling ever so slightly, his lips turned down and his eyes moist.
"What's wrong?" Thanos asked.
"We finally reestablished a line of communication across the arc tangent of the galaxy," Cha said. "I got a message through to Titan,
or
So I thought.
Thanos sat up. He knew. Deep in his heart, deep in his gut, he knew. But he made Cha say it anyway.
It's happened,
Cha told him.
I'm so sorry, Thanos. It's happened.
He retreated to the hills over the Chitauri city. He wanted to be alone in his grief. None of them could understand. The Chitauri literally had no words in their language to describe the death of a loved one, since everyone's thoughts were shared anyway. A dead Chitauri's experiences lived on in all other Chitauri. And Cha. He lay out on a field of hardy grass, staring up into the night sky. The Chitauri homeworld had three visible moons, two of which he could see tonight. From perturbations in the tides, Thanos had calculated that there had to be a fourth moon as well, this one locked into orbit with one of the other three such that it couldn't be seen. The sky was black and cold. His breath fogged the air. One moon glimmered redly, while the other shone a bright white. It made him think of his lordship's mismatched eyes, but only for a moment, because then his thoughts returned inevitably to Titan. Titan, which had broadcast a signal into the universe, warning any and all travelers to stay away. A signal that had been amplified and retransmitted through the galaxy, eventually picked up by Cha. Calamity had arrived, as he'd known it would, as he'd promised. Until the very instant that Cha told him, Thanos had held out the tiniest hope, born on a shard of self-doubt that he'd been wrong all along, that he'd miscalculated and Titan would thrive. Instead, he'd been proven right in short order. Sinta and Gwynth. The only people in the entire universe other than Cha who Thanos could call friends. It was possible that they were already dead. They had forsaken him at a crucial moment, yes, but he'd forgiven them almost effortlessly. They were scared. Fear spurred poor judgment. He hoped they still lived, even though he knew the odds were long. His dreams of Gwynth continued her decay. He held a foolish notion that since she was not completely rotted away in his dreams, that maybe she was still alive, waiting for him to rescue her. He told no one of this thought. It was his, and it was pathetic, and he concealed it greedily. Then there was his mother. How safe was she, locked away in that storehouse for mad titans? Was that the best place for her, attended to by synths, who would most likely survive the initial wave of chaos? Or was being in the psychosylum like being handcuffed to a block as the water rose around you? And his father? He refused to think of his father at all. He could not recall the last time he'd wept, as a child, certainly. He would not cry now. He wished, however, that he could. It took several more months to outfit a Leviathan to survive passage through the unstable wormhole. And then Thanos and Cha bid the other farewell.
When next we meet, Thanos, the other said, the Chitauri will have a mighty army, ready for our mutual benefit.
Thanos looks forward to leading such an army,
Cha said smoothly. Thanos himself was too busy making the final calculations for travel through the wormhole. Too busy shunting memories of Titan to a place in his mind where they could not distract him. His deal with the other, the plans they'd made together, they didn't matter anymore. He wanted only to get off this damned frigid planet, back to Titan. Surely there were survivors. Surely not everyone had been killed. He no longer needed an army. He needed a miracle.
Got any miracles on you, Thanos of Titan?
Kebby had asked him once.
If not, don't bother.
He had no miracles in his possession, but he had to do something anyway. He had to try. They lifted off from the Chitauri homeworld at midnight, passing through the dark atmosphere and into the darker reaches of space. It was the first time Thanos had seen the planet from above, He had been unconscious and near dead when they'd arrived on the exploding remains of the Blood Edda. The entire globe looked like a grimy black pearl, coruscating.